Bitcoin doesn't have an upgrade button. It is rough consensus. It's almost like you only know that it's been done after it's been done.
Get ready to jumpstart your week with the FCAT Crypto Brief, brought to you by the Fidelity Center for Applied Technology. Join us as we delve into the hottest topics, from blockchain breakthroughs to DeFi revolutions and market happenings. We promise to go deeper than the headlines and deliver market insights you can't get just anywhere. Be sure to hit subscribe for your bi-weekly dose of crypto commentary. Quick disclaimer, we're here for education, not investment advice. Views expressed are of the hosts, not Fidelity or its affiliates. Crypto's a wild space, highly volatile, can become illiquid anytime, and is strictly for those with a high risk tolerance. Buckle up, enjoy the ride, and let's dive into what's been happening recently.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the FCAT Crypto Brief. Today, I'm joined by Jack Newrider, David Shapiro, and a very special guest, Charlie Spears, the co-founder of Blockspace Media. Today, we have an exciting episode for you. We're going to be covering Op Next, an exciting Bitcoin conference hosted by Blockspace on April 16th in New York. So we're going to talk a bit about what attendees can expect. And specifically, we're going to dive into some topics around Bitcoin consensus and the quantum threat. But first of all, gentlemen, welcome to the show. Charlie, thank you so much for joining us this week.
Glad to be here. Love my FCAT and Fidelity folks.
Charlie, could you just give us a bit of background on yourself, on Blockspace, and then maybe a bit on Op Next?
Yeah, so Blockspace is an independent media company, more industry focused, but we cover everything mining, Bitcoin tech stuff. Now AI crosses a lot of streams, and we produce all sorts of content, podcasts, live streams, newsletters, conferences. Myself, I've been in Bitcoin for a really long time, more years than I'll say publicly. But I spent about a half decade as a miner here in Oklahoma, doing some, if you're familiar with the off-grid natural gas stuff. So I, you know, built some of those Bitcoin mines on gas wells, struck some deals with mixed results, and finally got into my end calling, which is everyone's, which is podcasting. If you're in a business long enough, eventually become a podcaster. So that's what we are. The main focus right now is this conference. It's a technical Bitcoin conference in New York, April 16th. And it's like your technical conference, but for investors. So we can talk a little bit more about that if you want.
Yeah, I think it'd be good to dive in like how you bridge that gap, because at least in my experience, there is a pretty large gap between kind of the investment research aspect of Bitcoin and then the technical research.
You know, even if you've been working in Bitcoin or broader crypto for a long time, you will find that if you're intellectually curious, there is an infinite rabbit hole. And because of that, and because of the volatility of this industry, because there's a new narrative every 3 or 4 years, it means that the actual development of the protocols themselves, and when I talk about this, I'm thinking mostly about Bitcoin, because that's what I'm familiar with. The development of the protocols themselves can kind of separate from the public understanding of it. And as that's happened, you've had other, you know, stakeholder groups or major components of the Bitcoin world, which have developed their own completely, you know, orthogonal story and culture and ecosystem. Miners really don't talk to the Bitcoin developers. The Bitcoin developers don't really talk to like the Bitcoin investors. And so here we are 16 years into this crazy thing called Bitcoin. It's a $1 or $2 trillion network. And while in some ways it's good that the stakeholder groups are differentiated and decentralized, this can make it really difficult to have cross-domain conversations. So what my co-founder and I and us at Blockspace Media do, we specialize in all of the different domains. And this conference is kind of a capstone on that theme, because we have the phone numbers of everybody in all the different domains, and we can lure them to this conference, platform the best technical minds, and then have it prepared and packaged, which is digestible as a annual conference for the investor who wants to know what the devs are talking about.
I think that's a great summary. This is the third installment of Op Next. I was in attendance at the previous two. I can definitely tell you it is a great conference, but I'd be interested to hear your perspective on maybe how the conference has shifted over the three iterations and maybe what the different focuses are.
Absolutely. So shout out to Fidelity FCAT. You guys, Rachel in particular, helped us launch the conference. We did our first one in November of 2024. over there in Boston. It was a great conference, maybe 100 people. And again, that was just scrappy bootstrapped. But we managed to kind of hit on a trend, which was there's not many technical conferences in Bitcoin, and they've historically been pretty narrow in scope of what you can talk about. And we wanted to take, I would say, a comparatively progressive approach to say, we're going to talk about things which define the future of Bitcoin. These are difficult topics because they're controversial. It's difficult. There's a lot of gravestones of conferences which have tried to do this type of thing in the past. So at the start, it was almost entirely a technical conference. We did our second one at MicroStrategy last spring in April of last year. And that was a bit of a hybrid, a little more investors, you know, a third of the hash rate on the Bitcoin network was present. And this year, we're going to New York because we're leaning into this theme that this is the conference for like Wall Street investors. We bring the devs and the mines, and you send your analysts, your token person at your company who wants to understand Bitcoin at a deeper level. One of the topics that we always talk about are like, what's the next soft fork in Bitcoin? And this is a deep, deep, long rabbit hole with tons of different ways we could go. We basically procure the people who are the authors of the proposals, and we give them the stage and let them talk about stuff. And then we also platform discussions among those people to debate, argue, or just discuss the landscape of the discourse. And that's been really valuable. The conference is both what is presented and what is talked about in the hall. It's equally a hall conference because there's, you know, people who got their first angel checks at our conference, companies which are started, Bitcoin improvement proposals, which materially changed from the hallways at our conference. So we get to celebrate that that's happened. I will also say that this past year, if you've been online in Bitcoin, you may have noticed there's a lot of friction and anger around a particular hot button topic, which is filtering Bitcoin transactions. For better or for worse, I feel like we have a monkey's paw where we wanted to drive the conversation of Bitcoin, and we like pulled a finger on the monkey's paw and we got that, but it was not really the best type of conversation, which is, it's now a pretty hostile discourse. But that's how Bitcoin goes. We're going to provide the venue and try to provide the best speakers and subjects.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an interesting thread to maybe pull on a little bit. That would be interesting for our listeners, is the actual like process for software upgrades or soft forks on Bitcoin. I think if you think about a traditional like software business, it seems relatively straightforward. However, in a decentralized ecosystem, it's much more challenging.
I think we wanted to talk a bit about what this looks like from the lens of quantum computers, because it can be really difficult to talk about this in abstract. And I think maybe the more broadly appealing topic would be quantum. It's very popular in the investor world right now. The devs are arguing about it, and it's about a third of our conference this year in terms of programming. Bitcoin's not a software company, so there's no CEO, so they can't just click a button and roll out the upgrade to the entire network. People write the software, they debate about the software, and then somehow some magic has to happen, and that software is distributed and run by everybody. That is a moving target and an unclear, ambiguous way that that happens. We want to be a part of that, though.
Bitcoin sort of has these distinct groups, whether it's the investors or the core devs or the miners. And it seems like with quantum, it's a unique situation because in this case, the investors are sort of looking at the developers and wondering, what do you guys think about this, or how is this being prioritized? You can look at the Bitcoin mailing list, but to the degree to where the actual conversations happen, maybe only a few privileged people like yourself actually have access or insight into those conversations. So how has that worked out for you?
So I go back and forth. At the top, I'll just say that while I'm opinionated about many things in Bitcoin, quantum is the thing I'm the most agnostic about at many different levels. And that's because quantum is this curveball topic, because to be an expert on what's going on in quantum discourse is actually very separate from being an expert on Bitcoin. Bitcoin's this really narrow field of study and like technical expertise. And quantum relies more on like physics than it does cryptography and consensus and distributed systems. And so what we're seeing is, for many years, people have said quantum's really, really far off. It's been a pretty predominant view. But lately, due to advances and even things like AI, people are now looking at a lot of the physics problems, may, you know, theoretically impossible or some intractable math or something, and saying this might actually have a timeline now. And because we are debating the timeline of quantum, now this is forcing a discussion on what might this look like to quantum-proof Bitcoin or other crypto economic systems. And so while there exist solutions and there exist a whole spectrum of ways and proposals that we could make Bitcoin quantum resistant or proof, we have to first argue over whether it is a real problem or not. That's one argument. Then we have the argument about how to quantum proof Bitcoin. And then there's a few more, like, what do we do about like Satoshi's coins, which are not quantum resistant? This is a really fun discussion for both the technical and the non-technical people.
Right. So it seems like at this point, the question of whether or not it is an actual threat seems to be leaning towards that it is real, considering that it has grown to take up a third of the conference. So I would say that probably signals like a general opinion that this is something that probably should be addressed. So would you agree with that? Or
I mean, I'm a believer that while markets aren't prescient, they do indicate what people care about, and they are a vector to show emergence of behavior and like knowledge. And capital cares about quantum right now, because that's both the most interesting thing. It'll get more people in the door at the conference, and it seems like it is gaining momentum to have a strong possibility of being one of Bitcoin's next soft forks. We're going to platform it. So I think that there's a few notable people in the physics community, physics research world, which have switched their stance. Not to say that quantum is around the corner, but that the problem set is much smaller and more defined, and it's less of a math problem and more of a, well, how do we build it? It's kind of like, what's the magic that makes planes fly? And now we have to build a plane, which is an engineering problem. So that's kind of what we're debating. What's funny is, you know, because it is like the physics people who have started to change their tune, a lot of the Bitcoin developers who are not as immersed in the physics world, they're deep in cryptography, like there is criticism that this knowledge hasn't crossed the chasm, the gap, you know, the specialty domain gap into the world of people who work on Bitcoin. And so there's a criticism that they're not concerned enough. I go both ways. Like I don't, it depends. I have recency bias. I'll talk to a Bitcoin developer and I'll be very reassured that like, oh, they're like fully scoping the problem. And then I'll talk to like one of these like, you know, quantum physics people and be like, oh my gosh, we have 400 days and then Bitcoin blows up. So I don't really know. It, you know, I go back and forth on this.
Charlie, you maybe answered it there a little bit, but I'd be curious your thoughts of like investors and ultimately like price and sentiment impacting developer roadmaps. Maybe the two are just happen to be correlated because everybody's thinking about the same things at the same time for similar reasons, or is it more like the investors that don't know the technical implications but are, you know, maybe scared because it's this big unknown that they don't know enough about is driving developers to care more about it, whether they should or shouldn't?
That is a great question, Jack. And it's the only opinion that I have currently. I actually wrote a piece on this a few weeks back. There is a narrative that some people say right now that Bitcoin is selling off because investors are concerned about quantum. I reject this. I do not think that's the case. Bitcoin is selling off for macro factors. However, I combine that with the view that I do believe investors will sell Bitcoin if they appropriately scope quantum risk and it does become a more near-term thing. And so I do think Bitcoin developers have to consider this. So I like to say that I don't think it is happening at scale. I don't think Bitcoin sell-off is happening at scale right now. There's a couple niche stories, but I think this is the kind of thing that narratives can change really quickly in Bitcoin, and that it could be a future headwinds for price, which would be significant. I'm also critical of the Bitcoin community. A lot of like the Bitcoin talking heads and podcasters, for some reason, categorically reject these claims, I think, because they've spent a decade armoring, you know, the Bitcoin narrative and saying that it is perfect. And while I am incredibly confident in Bitcoin, I don't want to be too confident. The future is uncertain and we have to be risk-minded. And so I think quantum is a serious risk. Satoshi talked about this 15 years ago. So I think that's a good, you know, finger in the wind for things we should be concerned about.
Yeah, being right on Bitcoin thus far doesn't necessarily imply that, you know, you're right on it 10 years out, but
correct.
Maybe there's a lot of like sort of hindsight and confirmation bias from that. It's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's always been this talk of the Bitcoin protocol ossifying eventually and sort of being set in stone. But quantum, you know, obviously is sort of a threat to that idea. And it's possible that there will be more technologies in the future that also require the protocol to evolve and adapt. So the whole idea that it could eventually ossify someday, you know, may not actually be realistic because quantum is the current thing, but we don't really know what comes after that. It could be social attacks conceived by an artificial intelligence. There's all kinds of things. So it's possible that this is sort of the first, you know, notable event in a series of events that require either upgrades or some type of evolution or adaptation.
Yeah, I'll piggyback on that. For the listener, like ossification means that a protocol no longer changes or like improves. And we've seen this historically, like email is a protocol, which is now ossified. And it's largely a protocol which you interact through permission to gatekeepers like Google or Yahoo or Microsoft. And it's generally viewed that protocols, over time, they get complicated. It gets difficult to like coordinate changes. Protocols like ossify, and at some point, they stop changing. But you don't know when that point is. It's like, I'm in Oklahoma. I'm driving through a small town. I ask for directions. And the guy says, well, turn right at the last stoplight. I'm like, how do you know it's the last stoplight? So we don't know that like the protocol has ossified yet. I'm of the opinion that we should try to prolong ossification and that 16 and a half years of Bitcoin is far too immature for us to properly like have this be a resilient, long-standing monetary network. And so quantum's a great one because I would say I'm quite confident there will be a quantum computer in my lifetime of some kind. So I want Bitcoin to be around for my lifetime. And so I care that we know how to prevent that risk or de-risk that event. So yes, quantum computers have a big implication for all of society, but Bitcoin is unique because it's not a centralized system. So other systems can more or less press a button and like upgrade the whole system. Bitcoin doesn't have an upgrade button. It is rough consensus. There's no heuristic. There's no defined way to determine how to upgrade Bitcoin. It's almost like you only know that it's been done after it's been done. I know that sounds a bit like hand-wavy and esoteric, but that kind of really is like how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, I think to that end, right, like the last really contentious debate in upgrade to Bitcoin was probably the block size wars. Like Taproot was relatively non-contentious. Do you have any thoughts on like comparison, contrast between block size wars and the current debate around quantum?
Not yet. I don't think there is an analogy to be had yet. It's the kind of thing that could turn into a block size war equivalent. And for those of you who aren't aware, the block size war was a divergence in the, you know, community's views on how Bitcoin should scale. Do we make blocks bigger or do we not commit to making blocks bigger? And while that's a simple concept, it has really deep technical implications. And so Bitcoin chose to make blocks bigger once and theoretically never change that in the future and pursue other scaling measures. And during that block size, you know, war debate of 2016, 2017, it was largely driven by like corporate and economic interests. And it was difficult to see this at the time, but it In retrospect, it certainly is much clearer. We can assume that future debates in Bitcoin, which are as heated and as like divergent, will have significant economic influence from private actors, public actors, probably governments now. And I would just say psych up for it, because like it's not crazy that Trump himself tweets that he has an opinion about Bitcoin's next quantum upgrade, or not upgrade. And imagine what that would do. The devs are talking about it. And I'll say, like, Bitcoin developers, Bitcoin core devs are not a monolith. It is a loose collective of people who contribute to the predominant, like, software project that runs Bitcoin. And they have different opinions. And there's research, you know, groups which, you know, do their own research. Fidelity has their own, like, team. And you guys do a lot of legwork. And so when we talk about how these different groups interact and come together, that's kind of what our conference is, because it happens online, it happens in podcasts, it happens in boardrooms, and I think it should also happen in an amphitheater venue, because these are the most important conversations. Bitcoin can quickly go from a $2 trillion network to a $10 trillion network, and if and when that happens, a lot of like the legwork you have to do building those relationships and familiarizing yourself with like the people and the concepts, you know, the stakes get way bigger. And so it's better to have done the legwork now than it is to kind of try to put it all together last minute.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And like another great selling point for why conferences like OpNext are so important. And so I think I'm curious, like if someone listening right now were like, okay, I want to go dive deep on quantum or any other topic of debate in Bitcoin, what would you recommend that they do?
Start with reading a few different primers from various people in the ecosystem. Sometimes you have to hear a concept multiple times to kind of wrap your head around it. So I assume you guys have put some stuff out internally or publicly. There's a great research piece for Medium 101, or say 201 level technical people from Chaincode, also based in New York. I've done some podcasts, a little like mini series, three podcasts, you know, mini series. Familiarize yourself with the main points. If you want to go deeper, you can go as deep as you want. And you can go so far as reading the mailing list. Bitcoin developers have, since Genesis, kind of had an email list everyone, you know, talks on. And it's an ongoing conversation. You can jump right in and read it. And there's a bunch of different threads on quantum there. And if you want, you can hop into the public arena, that is Twitter or LinkedIn, and participate in the chaotic dialectic that is the public forum. So all those are good places. I would say do not be alarmist about it, but also don't be dismissive about it. Those are kind of my only like two like guiding principles for most people.
And that's a fine line to walk, because I'm sure you're well aware.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll piggyback off of that and say that the quantum issue is unique because it's extremely difficult to form your own opinion on what you think the likelihood of it happening and what your personal timeline is, because it is such a physically complex topic. So I would say, you know, defer to the experts as well as you can.
In my view, again, I'm not a cryptographer and I'm not a developer. I'm a researcher. I'm kind of a Bayesian about the future. And I think the probability like fan graph is narrowing about what quantum looks like in the future. So I don't think it's 2 years away, but I don't think it's 20 years away. I think we have a much narrower range of possibilities for that happening.
Charlie, I know we're almost up on time here. I'd be curious, do you foresee if we come to a time when, you know, there's some sort of big upgrade that has to happen, that this is similar to the block size wars where there's a fractured Bitcoin community?
One word, yes, I think it's highly likely we have that.
And that's okay.
Yeah. But learn from history. You know, learn of like how not to crash out online. Make sure you try to be friends. Still get that beer with your mortal enemy, because in this day and age of increased delusion and, like, you know, fake reality online, the most important thing is that you stay grounded and mentally sane, which I think is the most important skill set in our industry.
Couldn't have said that better myself. Well, I know we're just about at time here, and Charlie, want to be respectful of your time, but thank you so much for joining us today. This was a great conversation. Jack and David, thanks for hopping on as well, as always. Stay tuned in 2 weeks for the next edition of the Crypto Brief. And in April, we actually, if you're interested in the quantum topic, we have Mike Daskal, who is the head of the quantum incubator over in FCAT. So he'll dive deep on some of the technical issues, but also stay tuned for Op Next in New York on April 16th. Thank you all so much.
Great. We'd love to see some Fidelity people there. See y'all.
Thanks.
Bye now.
Crypto as an asset class is highly volatile, can become illiquid at any time, and is for investors with a high risk tolerance. Crypto may also be more susceptible to market manipulation than securities. Crypto is not insured by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation or the Securities Investor Protection Corporation. Investors in crypto do not benefit from the same regulatory protections applicable to registered securities. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. This podcast was produced by the Fidelity Center for Applied Technology, also known as FCAT. FCAT does not offer digital assets nor provide clearing or custody of such assets. It is for informational purposes only and is not intended to provide tax, legal, insurance, or investment advice, and should not be construed as an offer to sell, a solicitation of an offer to buy, or a recommendation for any security or other asset by any Fidelity entity or third party. Views expressed are as of the date indicated, based on the information available at the time, and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of the authors and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. Fidelity and any other third parties mentioned in the podcast are independent entities and are not affiliated. Mentioning them does not suggest a recommendation or endorsement by Fidelity. This information is not intended for distribution to or use by any person or entity in any jurisdiction or country where such distribution or use would be contrary to local law or regulation. Persons accessing this information are required to inform themselves about and observe such restrictions. Third-party trademarks appearing herein are the property of their respective owners. All others are the property of FMR LLC. Copyright 2026 FMR LLC. All rights reserved. 1040156.